The teacher who is indeed wise does not bid you to enter the house of his wisdom, but rather leads you to the threshold of your mind. That's a little Khalil Gibran to start your day. What's up, moneymakers? This is Mahara Tucker in Atlanta, Georgia, and you are on the Think and Grow Rich call. Our very gifted host, Mr. Paul Hutchings, will be with us shortly. But for now, tell us your name and where you're calling in from.
Good morning, Mahara. Larry and Wendy, McKinney, Texas.
Hey, Larry and Wendy. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Rick from Salt Lake.
Good morning, Rick. How is it in Salt Lake this morning?
It's a beautiful day here.
It's a beautiful day in Atlanta, GA as well. Welcome to the call.
It's warm.
Good morning, Mahara. It's Adele from Long Island. Raining.
Hi, beautiful Adele. I'm glad you're calling this morning and appreciate you taking us through the 30-30 challenge. For everybody who knows, we're ramping up with that, right?
Yep. My pleasure. There are a lot of people coming on board with it, too, which is awesome. I love it.
We appreciate you. Who else is on the line this morning?
Good morning. Bonnie from Annapolis is here.
Hey, in Annapolis, how are you this morning?
Ted from California is here.
Good morning in California. We're glad you're on the line.
Good morning, Sarah. Kathy from Idaho.
Hey, Kathy. Early, how are you?
Early, I'm good.
We're glad you could be with us.
Thank you. Here.
Good morning.
This is Arthur in St. Louis.
Hey, Arthur. Welcome to the call. And I was just saying, people of wealth and wisdom tap into this call every morning, and we're so glad you're here. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Good morning, my family. It's Elise in Atlanta.
Hey, Elise, what's up? Welcome to the call.
Yeah, I'm getting jacked up. But let a call Fowler come to shoot me with the phone. And the thing will say, well, I'm dialing 911. You have $1.
Good morning.
I had to land on the ground. I called Took.
Good morning, welcome to the call.
You're there.
Good morning. This is Mark in Baltimore.
Hey, Mark. Welcome to the call. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Mahara.
Glad to have you on the line.
Good morning, my hair. This is Bruce in Dallas.
Hey, Bruce.
Earn while you
good
learn.
Morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, my hair.
This is
Stan
and Tyrone
from North Carolina.
This is Billy in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Billy. Hey, Stan. Hey, Tyrone. Welcome to the Think and Grow Rich call. You guys are
good. I wouldn't let you down, dear heart.
Woo-hoo! Glad you're here.
Good morning, my hello. This is Oliver from Miami. Good morning, people. Good morning.
Hey, Oliver. Welcome to the call. Glad you're here.
New child calling
good
in
morning,
from Atlanta, Georgia. Good morning. Yo, new child.
New child. Right.
Oh, people.
Good morning, Mahara. Bill Winch here, Rochester, New York.
I got it. It's Bill. It's new child. It's powerful people. Who else is stepping out this morning?
Rick from California. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Being here. He's
from Pennsylvania.
Hey, in Pennsylvania. Glad you're here, too.
Good morning, Mahara. This is Tim in North Carolina.
Hey, Stan. What you doing?
Hanging in there, enjoying this beautiful day.
Oh, me too.
Good morning, man.
Hey,
what's up, my friends? This is Paul Hutchings dialing in from beautiful Southeast Idaho. It is a terrific Tuesday, September 16, 2014. Another great day to be alive. I'm excited to be here, my friends. Excited to be learning and growing with each of you. Excited to be pumping each other up as we do sometimes, right? From time to time, sometimes we need to get fired up. Sometimes we need to get excited. Sometimes we need to, you know, remind ourselves what we're about. You know, it's kind of a funny story. Yesterday, I took quite a few hours, first part of my day, just getting clear and thinking about what do I want. And I went through and I redid my major definite purpose / personal manifesto, you know, and updated it and refreshed it, you know, because it was kind of stale. I put the one that I was using together quite a while ago. So I put together this brand new one, and I had this idea. I went and downloaded some epic music from, like, Hans Zimmer, you know, like the film score music, you know, that music that just, like, you know, just, like, just lifts your soul up and makes you feel inspired, right? So I took my major definite purpose and my self-confidence formula and my personal manifesto, and I put this epic Hans Zimmer music behind it. And I tell you, it's the coolest thing. Like, last night, you know, 9:30, I'm walking out, you know, around my yard under the stars, and I'm just moving my body, like, you know, imagining hitting my new goals, and, you know, it's just epic music is in the background cheering me on, kind of like just this amazing feeling, but kind of hilarious, right, to, like, the average person who would imagine, you know, I picture my neighbor peeking over the fence and looking in my yard and seeing me out there, you know, and he'd probably laugh pretty hard. But you wouldn't, right? You understand that. You understand that occasionally we've got to motivate ourselves. Every day, right? We've got to remind ourselves that the stuff we're doing in life is important. It's important. Living our life destiny, it's important. Achieving dreams, it's important. Figuring out how to be the best version of ourselves, it's important. There are people depending upon us, right? It's important that we somehow figure out how to be the best we can be. It's important that we somehow figure out how to motivate ourselves. It's important that we somehow figure out how to gain inspiration so that we can inspire not only ourselves, but so that we can inspire others. It's important stuff. It's fun stuff. It's stuff that I'm just having a great time with, right, as we continue to learn and grow and be thinking, grow rich practitioners. Also, another quick experience I'll share with you yesterday that was kind of a interesting kind of note, kind of a you know, learning experience. You know, we talk about failure all the time and temporary setbacks and doing things that don't work. I sent an email out yesterday, and I think I had the highest unsubscribe number in the history of my time on the internet. Like 38 people unsubscribed from this email I sent out, and I looked at that last night. You know, I was kind of reviewing my day, which is another thing that I'm going to be a little bit more diligent in doing moving forward into my better future now, is reviewing my day every day. So I was kind of looking at that. I was like, oh, my gosh, wow, you know, 38 people unsubscribed with one email. Wow, you know, like, interesting, right? Maybe I ought not to send an email like that again, right? And, you know, there's this tendency to kind of get down a little bit, like, you know, you goofed up. And you know, as thinking urge practitioners, we stop ourselves when things like that happen. And we have little failures and we have little temporary setbacks. We don't get down. We don't feel bad. We instead step back and look at that experience as an observer and say, you know, what can I learn from this stuff? So anyway, guys, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be failing with you. I'm excited to be willing to fail. I'm excited to be trying things that don't work. And more importantly, I'm excited to be picking up the lessons along the way so that I can learn how to be a better person, and that's what we're all doing in this journey of, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a thinking courage practitioner. We're learning how to be free financially. We are being free financially. We are taking action now. We are bringing results into our lives every day that we can learn from, and I believe that we are stepping into our freedom now. We're stepping into our financial freedom. We're stepping into our mental and emotional freedom as we're learning how to control our minds. We're learning how to control our thoughts. And we know that our thoughts and our minds, in a lot of cases, are the causes for the effects that we have in our lives. So we're learning all that stuff. We're learning how to be better parents. We're learning how to be better family members, better, hopefully better community members. We're learning how to be better in every way possible. And at the end of the day, we're learning how to be the best version of ourselves. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited you're here. Thank you for being here. Hey, if you're excited to know that you've got this, like, super doppelganger version of yourself waiting for you in your future, and the only thing standing between you and getting to that best version of yourself are the choices you make today and tomorrow and the next day, if that excites you, I want to hear you scream into the line as I unmute the phones right
now.
Oh, yeah.
That's I am. Hey, I love you guys. I love you. I wish I had some Hans Zimmer music to play right now as we're going to go through the major definite purpose self-confidence formula. Maybe you can just imagine some epic music in your head as we're going through this. So let's do this, my friends. Let's repeat our purpose. Our purpose. Here we go. And if you want to lead us through this, please shoot me a message, preferably in the Facebook group. We are thinkandgrowrich.com. Get in that Facebook group, and in the pinned post at the top, just let me know you want to lead us through this. And you're welcome to read it if you don't have it memorized yet. That's fine, but would love to have some variety so that you guys don't just hear me doing this every day. But I'm going to do it today because we don't have any volunteers for today. So here we go. By the first day of 2000 and... I will have in my possession, which will come to me in various amounts from time to time during the interim. In exchange for this money, I will give the most efficient service of which I am capable, rendering the fullest possible quantity and the best possible quality of service in the capacity of... I believe I will have this money in my possession. My faith is so strong that I can now see this money before my eyes. I can touch it with my hands. It is now waiting transfer to me at the time and in the proportion that I deliver the service I intend to render in return for it. I am awaiting a plan by which to accumulate this money, and I will follow that plan when it is received. First, I know that I have the ability to achieve the object of my definite purpose in life. Therefore, I demand it, persistent and continuous action toward its attainment, and I here and now promise to render such action. Second, I realize the dominating thoughts in my mind will eventually reproduce themselves in outward physical action and gradually transform themselves into physical reality. Therefore, I will concentrate my thoughts for 30 minutes daily upon the task of thinking of the person I intend to become, thereby creating in my mind a clear mental picture of that person. What does your picture look like? Does your picture, do you look at your health? Like, do you have a, you know, like a chiseled abs? And, you know, I'm curious, what does your picture look like of yourself? Interesting thought to ponder. Third, I know through the principle of autosuggestion, any desire that I persistently hold in my mind will eventually seek expression through some practical means of attaining the object back of it. Therefore, I will devote 10 minutes daily to demanding of myself the development of self-confidence. Fourth, I have clearly written down a description of my definite chief aim in life, and I will never stop endeavoring until I shall have developed sufficient self-confidence for its attainment. And fifth, I fully realize that no wealth or position can long endure unless built upon truth and justice. Therefore, I will engage in no transaction that does not benefit all whom it affects. I will succeed by attracting to myself the forces I wish to use and the cooperation of other people. I will induce others to serve me because of my willingness to serve others. I will eliminate hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and cynicism by developing love for all humanity, because I know that a negative attitude toward others can never bring me success. I will cause others to believe in me because I will believe in them and in myself. I will sign my name to this formula, commit it to memory, and repeat it aloud once a day with full faith that it will gradually influence my thoughts and actions so that I will become a self-reliant and successful person. I'm telling you, my friends, there's something magical about that formula when we read it and we believe it. Yesterday, not only did I record my new one, but I also printed off a copy. And first thing I did is I set it on my printer here in my office. And then I was reminded, you know, no, that won't do. Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich says, put this by your nightstand. So I picked up the pages and I walked them over into my bedroom and I set them down on my nightstand. And I'm glad that I did, because last night, right before bed, I picked up those pages and I looked at my purpose and I planted that seed again in the fertile soil of my mind, and it seems to be that's a requirement. I was watching a little Bob Proctor yesterday, and he was talking about goal setting, and he didn't call it the major definite purpose, but you know, he has this card that he gives you in this product that I have of his that says buy, and that has a date with a year, and then he writes, I am so happy and grateful now that, and then you're to fill in, what is it? Your major definite purpose, right? He doesn't call it that, but that's pretty much what it is. And he was talking about this, and he says, you write this down, and you carry this around with you, and he's got this little laminated card, and I think I will. I think I'll write it down and carry this down with me, carry this around with me. But this is what Bob Proctor said as I was listening to him. He says, when you write this down, and when you think about it every day, and you take it with you, he said, it must happen. He said, it must happen. And I was like, wow. You know, wow. That's confidence, right? It must happen. There's no other option. It must come into reality. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool, right? That's pretty cool. So anyway, little side note there. So my friends, let's go ahead and jump into our regularly scheduled study. And we're going to get through this book. You know, traditionally for the first few years of this call, we stayed in Think and Grow Rich and the Science of Wallace Waddles. Man, how did I forget the name of that book? The Science of Getting Rich, that's right. And we decided to jump into this Law of Success, which is this, like, just towering text of 1,100 pages. And, you know, I thought it would be a good little break, especially for those of us who have been on the call for 3-4 years, you know, cycling back into Think and Grow Rich again and again and again. Not that it's a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a great thing. But just wanted a little refresher, right? Something a little bit different. And I'm personally glad we did go into this book, The Law of Success. I don't know what some of you guys feel, but this has added a lot of flesh, I think would be a good word to use, a lot of flesh to the outline of the laws of success for me. It's added a lot of meat. It's added some different stories. It's added some different insights, and I've been grateful for it. But I'm also going to be grateful when we get back to Think and Grow Rich, and we are only like 100 or 200 pages away, and we're going to get back into a couple of those other books that traditionally have been the foundation of this call. So please stick with us through the latter part of this book. Like I said, we're about done. We're in the chapter called Concentration, which is a law of the Law of Success, and we're going to jump right into this. Mental suggestion. We're going to talk about revivals today. I wonder what Dr. Hill is going to say. Interesting stuff, right? He writes this. Modern psychology has firmly established the fact that the greater part of the phenomena of the religious revival are psychical rather than spiritual in their nature. And recognize the fact that the mental excitement attendant upon the emotional appeals of the revivalists must not be classified with the phenomena of hypnotic suggestion rather than that with that of true religious experience. And those who have made a close study of the subject believe that instead of such excitement tending to elevate the mind and exalt the spirit of the individual, it serves to weaken and degrade the mind and prostitute the spirit by dragging it into the mud of abnormal psychic frenzy and emotional excess. In fact, by some careful observers familiar with the respective phenomena, the religious revival meeting is classed with the public hypnotic entertainment as a typical example of psychic intoxication and hysterical excess. David Starr Jordan, Chancellor Emeritus of Leland Stanford University, says, whiskey, cocaine, and alcohol bring temporary insanity, and so does a revival of religion. The late Professor William James of Harvard University, the eminent psychologist, says, religious revivalism is more dangerous to the life of society than drunkenness. it should be unnecessary to state that in this lesson, the term revival is used in the narrower signification indicating the typical religious emotional excitement known by the term in question and is not intended to apply to the older and respected religious experience designated by the same term, which was so highly revered among the Puritans, Lutherans, and others in the past. A standard reference work speaks of the general subject of the revival as follows, quote, "Revivals occur in all religions. When one takes place, a large number of persons who have been comparatively dead or indifferent to spiritual considerations simultaneously or in quick succession become alive to their importance, alter spiritually and morally, and act with exceeding zeal in converting others to their views. A Mohammedan revival takes the form of a return to the strict doctrines of the Quran and a desire to propagate them by the sword. A Christian minority living in the place is in danger of being massacred by the revivalists. Pentecostal effusion of the Holy Spirit produced a revival within the infant church, followed by numerous conversions from outside. Revivals, though not often called by that name, occurred at intervals from apostolic times till the Reformation. The revivalists being sometimes so unsympathetically treated that they left the church and formed sects. While in other cases, and notably in those of the founders of the monastic orders, they were retained and acted on the church as a whole. The spiritual impulse which led to the Reformation and the antagonistic one which produced or attended the rise of the Society of Jesus were both revivalist. It is, however, to sudden increase of spiritual activity within Protestant churches that the term revival is chiefly confined. The enterprise of the Wesleys and the Whitefield in this county and England from 1738 onward was thoroughly revivalist. Since then, various revivals have from time to time occurred, and nearly all denominations aim at their production. The means adopted are prayer for the Holy Spirit, meetings continued night after night, often to a late hour, stirring addresses, chiefly from revivalist laymen, and after meetings to deal with those impressed. Ultimately, it has been found that some of those apparently converted have been steadfast, others have fallen back, while deadness, proportioned to the previous excitement, temporarily prevails. Sometimes excitable persons at revival meetings utter piercing cries or even fall prostrate. These morbid manifestations are now discouraged and have in consequence become more rare. In order to understand the principle of the operation of mental suggestion in the revival meeting, we must first understand something of what is known as the psychology of the crowd. Psychologists are aware that the psychology of a crowd, considered as a whole, differs materially from that of the separate individuals composing that crowd. There is a crowd of separate individuals and a composite crowd in which the emotional natures of the units seem to blend and fuse. Fascinating, isn't it? The change from the first-named crowd to the second arises from the influence of earnest attention or deep emotional appeals of common interest. When this change occurs, the crowd becomes a composite individual, the degree of whose intelligence and emotional control is but little above that of its weakest member. This fact, startling as it may appear to the average reader, is well known and is admitted by the leading psychologists of the day, and many important essays and books have been written thereupon. The predominant characteristics of this composite mindedness of a crowd are the evidences of extreme suggestibility, response to appeals of emotion, vivid imagination, and action arising from imitation, all of which are mental traits universally manifested by primitive man. In short, the crowd manifests atavism, I'm going to have to look that word up, or reversion to early racial traits. Giles, in his Psychology of the Aggregate Mind of an Audience, holds that the mind of an assemblage listening to a powerful speaker undergoes a curious process called fusion, by which the individuals in the audience, losing their personal traits for the time being to a greater or less degree, are reduced, as it were, to a single individual whose characteristics are those of an impulsive youth of 20, imbued in general with high ideals but lacking in reasoning, power, and will. Tard, the French psychologist, advances similar views. Professor Joseph Jastrow, in his Fact and Fable in Psychology, says, quote, in the production of the state of mind, a factor as yet unmentioned plays a leading role, the power of mental contagion. Error, like truth, flourishes in crowds. Social proof, right? Those of us who have studied a little bit of influence, particularly the book Influence by Dr. Robert Cialdini, Social Influence. He talks about one of the key influencing factors over the mind of another human being is social proof. What's everyone else doing, right? At the heart of sympathy, each finds a home. No form of contagion is so insidious in its outset, so difficult to check in its advance, so certain to leave germs that may at any moment reveal their pernicious power as a mental contagion. The contagion of fear, of panic, of fanaticism, of lawlessness, of superstition, of error. In brief, we must add to the many factors which contribute to deception. The recognized lowering of critical ability, of the power of accurate observation, indeed of rationality, which merely being one of a crowd induces. The conjurer finds it easy to perform to a large audience because, among other reasons, it is easier to arouse their admiration and sympathy, easier to make them forget themselves and to enter into the uncritical spirit of Wonderland. It would seem that in some respects, the critical tone of an assembly, like the strength of a chain, is that of its weakest member. Professor Laban, in his The Crowd, says, the sentiments and ideas of all the persons in the gathering take one and the same direction, and their conscious personality vanishes. A collective mind is formed, doubtless transitory, by presenting very clearly marked characteristics. The gathering has become what, in the absence of a better expression, I will call an organized crowd, or, if the term be considered preferable, a psychological crowd. It forms a single being and is subject to the law of mental unity of crowds. The most striking peculiarity presented by a psychological crowd is the following. Whoever be the individuals that compose it, however like or unlike their mode of life, their occupation, their character, or their intelligence, the fact that they have been transformed into a crowd puts them in possession of a sort of collective mind, which makes them feel, think, and act in a manner quite different from that in which each individual of them would feel, think, and act were he in a state of isolation. There are certain ideas and feelings which do not come into being or do not transform themselves into acts, except in the case of the individuals forming a crowd. In crowds, it is stupidity and not mother wit that is accumulated. In the collective mind, the intellectual aptitudes of the individuals, and in consequence their individuality, is weakened. The most careful observations seem to prove that an individual emerged for some length of time in a crowd, in action, soon finds himself in a special state, which most resembles the state of fascination in which the hypnotized individual finds himself. The conscious personality has entirely vanished. Will and discernment are lost. All feelings and thoughts are bent in the direction determined by the hypnotizer. Under the influence of a suggestion, he will undertake the accomplishment of certain acts with irresistible impetuosity. This impetuosity is the more irresistible in the case of crowds from the fact that, the suggestion being the same for all the individuals of the crowd, it gains strength by reciprocity. Moreover, the mere fact that he forms part of an organized crowd, a man descends several rungs in the ladder of civilization. Isolated, he may be a cultured individual. In a crowd, he is a barbarian, that is, a creature acting by instinct. He possesses, I couldn't help but think, you know, like how most of us in our normal lives, like we would probably not run around screaming out into the universe. But when we get together on this call, you know, we do that every morning when we open up the line. We're like, whoa! You know, we're all screaming into the line. So it's interesting, isn't it? Just in light of what we're learning here. No judgment, not saying it's bad or you know, good. We're just, you know, kind of learning and taking in some of these ideas that Dr. Hill is pointing out to us. He possesses the spontaneity the violence, the ferocity, and also the enthusiasm and heroism of primitive beings, whom he further tends to resemble by the facility with which he allows himself to be induced to commit acts contrary to his most obvious interests and his best-known habits. An individual in a crowd is a grain of sand amid other grains of sand, which the wire stirs up at will. Professor Davenport, in his Primitive Traits in Religious Revival, says, quote, "The mind of the crowd is strangely like that of primitive man. Most of the people in it may be far from primitive in emotion, in thought, in character. Nevertheless, the result tends always to be the same. Stimulation immediately begets action. Reason is in abeyance. The cool, rational speaker has little chance beside the skillful, emotional orator. The crowd thinks in images, and speech must take this form to be accessible to it. The images are not connected by any natural bond, and they take each other's place like the slides of a magic lantern. It follows from this, of course, that appeals to the imagination have paramount influence. The crowd is united and governed by emotion rather than by reason. Emotion is the natural bond, for men differ much less in this respect than in intellect. It is also true that in a crowd of 1,000 men, the amount of emotion actually generated and existing is far greater than the sum which might conceivably be obtained by adding together the emotions of the individuals taken by themselves. The explanation of this is that the attention of the crowd is always directed either by the circumstances of the occasion or by the speaker to certain common ideas as, quote, salvation, close quote, in religious gatherings, and every individual in the gathering is stirred with emotion, not only because the idea or the shibboleth stirs him, but also because he is conscious that every other individual in the gathering believes in the idea or the shibboleth and is stirred by it too. And this enormously increases the volume of his own emotion and consequently the total volume of emotion in the crowd. As in the case of the primitive mind, imagination has unlocked the floodgates of emotion, which on occasion may become wild enthusiasm or demoniac frenzy. Continuing on here, that's a close quote from that individual. The student of suggestion will see that not only are the emotional members of a revival audience subject to the effect of the composite mindedness arising from the psychology of the crowd and are thereby weakened in resistive power, but that they are also brought under the influence of two other very potent forms of mental suggestion. Added to the powerful suggestion of authority exercised by the revivalist, which is exerted, that's another one, right, listed in influence, authority, which is exerted to its fullest along possible lines, very similar to that of the professional hypnotist, is the suggestion of imitation exerted upon each individual by the combined force of the balance of the crowd. As Durkheim observed in his psychological investigations, the average individual is, quote, intimidated by the mass, close quote, of the crowd around him or before him, and experiences that peculiar psychological influence exerted by the mere number of people as against his individual self. Not only does the suggestible person find it easy to respond to the authoritative suggestions of the preacher and the exhortation of his helpers, but he is also brought under the direct fire of the imitative suggestions, reciprocity, right, of those on all sides who are experiencing emotional activities and who are manifesting them outwardly. Reciprocity, that's another one in the book Influence. Not only does the voice of the shepherd urge forward, but the tinkle of the bellwether's bell is also heard, and the imitative tendency of the flock, which causes one sheep to jump because one ahead of him does so, and so on until the last sheep has jumped, needs but the force of the example of a leader to start into motion the entire flock. This is not an exaggeration. Human beings in times of panic, fright, or deep emotion of any kind manifest the imitative tendency of the sheep and the tendency of cattle and horses to stampede under imitation. To the student experienced in the experimental work of the psychological laboratory, there is the very closest analogy observed in the respective phenomena of the revival and hypnotic suggestion. In both cases, the attention and interest is attracted by the unusual procedure, the element of mystery, mystery and awe is induced by words and actions calculated to inspire them. The senses are tired by monotonous talk in an impressive and authoritative tone. And finally, the suggestions are projected in a commanding, suggestive manner, familiar to all students of hypnotic suggestion. The subject, I can't believe this book was written in 1928. I mean, it's just fascinating the level of understanding that Dr. Napoleon Hill had of influence and even hypnotic suggestion in, you know, everyday communication. The subject in both cases are prepared for the final suggestions and commands by previously given minor suggestions such as stand up or look this way, etc. in the case of the hypnotist, and by, quote, all those who think so-and-so, stand up, and, quote, all who are willing to become better, stand up. In the case of the revivalist, the impressionable subjects are thus accustomed to obedience to suggestion by easy stages. And finally, the commanding suggestion, come right up this way, right up, come, I say, come, etc., which takes the impressed ones right off their feet and rushes them up to the front, are almost precisely the same in the hypnotic experiment or seance on the one hand and the sensational revival on the other. Every good revivalist would make a good hypnotic operator, and every good hypnotic operator would make a good revivalist if his mind were turned in that direction. And we still have some more to read here, so you know what, I'm going to go ahead and stop because we can continue this tomorrow. Fascinating discussion, isn't it? Interesting things to ponder. I'm going to make one comment, and then we'll jump into the mastermind portion of the call because I'm anxious to hear, you know, what thoughts you guys have had. I'm kind of like reserving judgment here because I can see that in some cases this group hysteria, you know, so to speak, this group effect of the blending of the minds into, you know, one overall group mind, in some cases I could see how that could be maybe not a good thing, right? As we sometimes, like, if we sacrifice our own reasoning power, if we you know, make poor choices, and, you know, I mean, all you got to do is look throughout history and you see some of the really, really bad things that have happened in this sort of a group scenario, right? I mean, the worst that I can, I mean, one of the worst, I guess probably not the worst, but one of the worst is the whole Jim Jones and the Kool-Aid thing, right, where all those people went down south and committed mass suicide. They all got in this group. They had a you know, a very charismatic leader, and somehow their minds got blended into one, so to speak, and they were influenced to do something awful, right? That's the one extreme. And so I think this information is really good for us all to be aware of. On the one hand, to just know, right, to just know that influence in the world is there and it's available, and to maybe be on guard a little bit sometimes when we're in groups. On the other hand, I also feel that sometimes getting in groups and having our emotions aroused to higher states, you know, of emotion, we make sometimes decisions that are important for our lives. Sometimes, you know, judging around in everyday average society, what kind of social situations are we surrounded by? What kind of beliefs and values are we surrounded? We're surrounded by, in most cases, you know, these common beliefs that we should, you know, go to school, get a job, and, you know, have a mortgage and just pay our bills and be happily ever, you know, live happily ever after. That's kind of the group stuff that we're dealing with when we don't choose to get into different groups, right? We're just we're dealing with that. We're dealing sometimes with negativity. We're dealing sometimes with so many people around us who have closed minds, who don't understand that the world's a big place, who don't understand that, gosh, you know, great things can be achieved. There's so much opportunity out there, right? There's people sometimes around us who haven't had their minds open to that stuff, and therefore their minds are closed, and so sometimes the groups that we're in, they influence or they strive to influence in ways that are not so good for us, and so sometimes we've got to make a decision to pull ourselves out of those groups and put ourselves ourselves into other groups where we can be influenced by, you know, things like having a dream, believing in ourselves, believing in each other, believing in the vision of the group that we're associated with, right? Believing that we have better things waiting for us in our futures, believing that we have the power within us to do the things that we want to accomplish in our own lives. And sometimes we've got to get in groups, right, where we can have our minds blended, so to speak, so that we can make powerful decisions for our lives, right? So I can kind of see how maybe it's kind of like the law of polarity, right? There's good, bad, light, dark, you know, this law of polarity where everything has its opposite. Maybe this idea of blending your mind into a group mind, maybe it can kind of fall along those lines. There may be a dark side to it, and there may be a very, very light side to it. And as long as we're aware of it, then I think we can be protected and make sure that we're using it to our advantage and not to our disadvantage. So those are my thoughts. I'm anxious to hear your thoughts. Let's jump into the mastermind portion of the call. Keep in mind this is not a company-specific call, so please no mention of company names, system names, leader names, unless the leaders are a part of our community. And, try to be relevant, and love to hear from you. 1 second. Star 6, who's first?
Good morning, Paul. This is Mark in Baltimore.
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I enjoyed the call this morning and concentration and being able to sell to a group. Sometimes it can be good. Sometimes it can be bad in the case of Jim Jones. But I was reading Secrets of Closing Sales by Charles B. Roth, and chapter 20 is Champ Closer as a Business Actor. And so sometimes closing sales, you have to be able to bring yourself into the same commonality as the person that you're selling to. And that's becoming an actor in selling. In the next to last chapter, it says closing sales to groups. So in a way, being able to put yourself in a commonality with the groups and relating to them as you relate to one individual is a way of master sales. And I just wanted to thank you, Paul, and thank you, Think and Grow Rich family, for this opportunity. I love you all.
Hey, great insight, Mark. Great point. And absolutely, master sales, selling in groups, probably something that we all aspire to. So I appreciate that. Star 6, who's next? If we're not already doing it.
Hi, Paul. Karen from Washington.
Hey, good morning, Karen.
Morning. I'm the lady who works with the convicted felons in the drug and alcohol rehab place.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I work with up to 200 men, and I can see on a daily basis this group psychology. We have what we call an upper structure of 10 men that run the facility of the third floor where I work. And I can see from week to week as the upper structure changes how the psychology of the group changes. And what Napoleon Hill said about it's only strong as your weakest member, you know, when we have an upper structure who is weak and not really into it, it reflects in the whole of the community. We have many more problems and things go on. When we have a strong upper structure, the community is great. It runs like a well-oiled machine. So it's really an interesting psychological experiment to be working where I'm working. And I use the group psychology in my groups a lot, too. And there is really something to the phenomenon. It's quite the field of study. But thanks. Back to you.
Wow, that's fascinating, Karen. Oh, wow, amazing. Thanks for sharing that experience with us. Really appreciate that. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Is that Janice?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Janice?
I'm wonderful. Hello, Think and Grow Rich family. As I listened to the psychology part of the call at the group mindset, I remember being asked as a child to prepare some small vials of water for a revival set up that a gentleman was having. And we as children, we never thought anything about it. We just got some buckets of tap water and poured it into the vials. Fast forwarding, we went to a convention center, and everything was going along well. We children were singing and whatnot for the gentleman. But the part that rubbed me the wrong way, and I got in trouble about it, but anyway, it rubbed me the wrong way, was when the gentleman said that this was water that had come from the motherland. That completely turned me off of anything that he presented from that point, and I couldn't stay on stage with him any longer. But the folks, they bought the vials, and they were revived, and some guy got up, and he was walking and supposedly in a wheelchair, but I erased all of the good that came from that event because of the one lie that was told within it. So having good things to happen and mixing that with a falsehood can completely destroy the group mindset. So that's all I want to share on that today. So move forward, family.
Yeah, Janice, such a great point. Your mind became instantly disharmonized when you figured out that you had been lied to. And I've had that experience too. If I find out that somebody's lied to me, it becomes extremely difficult for them to have influence in my life. Interesting. Thank you, Janice. Great point.
Hey, Paul. Larry.
Hey, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning. I was thinking about this whole mob and crowd rule type of thing that we're talking about today, and we get many instances of this every year. And one of them is that on Super Bowl Sunday, and because we always see what happens with the crowds that win and the crowds that lose, there's definitely two different mindsets, but you see it in both almost every time on both sides in the hometown of whichever team was playing. Same thing with the World Series and any other major sporting events that we have going on. This whole crowd mentality takes over, and people who wouldn't do things definitely do things that they wouldn't do on their own, but they do it in a crowd mind. The other thing was then, and they were talking, since they were talking a lot about revivals in this, I happen to think back to the days when Dr. Billy Graham was doing crusades, which were basically revivals, and how much more controlled those crusades were when people went forward by the thousands and tens of thousands, but it wasn't this mindset like Dr. Napoleon Hill was painting from the early turn of the century and before. And I think it did have a lot to do with when they said in that book that if certain people perceive something as being a negative, then they won't do that. And I think that's part of what Dr. Graham had done in his revivals, is that there was just a calmness about being filled with the Spirit and being called forward. So it doesn't always have to be that a revival would end up in frenzied type of behavior by the crowd. It certainly can be that, but it doesn't have to be that. Back to you, Paul.
Yeah, appreciate that, Larry. Good thought. Star 6, who's next?
Bill Lynch.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Paul, and good morning, family. You know, that's interesting you should bring out about Dr. Billy Graham. I was actually at one of his crusades in Madison Square Garden in New York, and he actually is incredible because everything he did in there was all positive. It was not like condemning anything or telling people how wrong they were, but it was all done as a positive thing. George Beverly Shea sang, Ethel Waters sang, and the choir sang, but it was all a very moving experience, and there was nothing really negative to draw from it. So I just wanted to back up the statement that I just made about that. Billy Graham's crusades were a very positive thing. So Back to you, Paul.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, Paul. This is Neville. How are you, young man?
Well, Neville, I am marvelous. How are you, sir?
Blessed, young man. Blessed and highly favored. Yeah. This is a marvelous day. Hello to all your thinking Gorbridge family. Something in the book, I think, I'm not recall if you read it this morning, it says, nothing is so contagious as enthusiasm. It is the real allegory of the tale of Orpheus. It moves stones, it charms brutes. Enthusiasm is a genius of sincerity, and truth accomplishes no virtues without it. Now, it's fascinating. And last night, in my community where we live here, we had to go to City Hall for a meeting because they're trying to drop a flyover into our community, and we believe that would destroy the community. So we have a pretty large crowd in a large room. So we went in, and lots of people spoke, and you're going to talk about crowd enthusiasm and getting stuff done. So we went in, and before I was in the first group, the last speaker to speak. So what I did when I went up, I coalesced everything the people had said before in a positive manner. I spoke to the city council leader and the mayor in a positive manner, and I created a situation of harmony and happiness in what the benefit of doing what we wanted and not what would be beneficial. And then at the end of what I was saying and everything else, I said, well, give me a vote. Well, they're pretty well disciplined. They smile sheepishly, and that's whatever the case may be. And I'm sure a couple of them jerked their hand to go up, but they didn't at the time. However, behind me, the group that came with me and the whole firm said, yes, give us a vote. Give us a vote on this thing here. So it enthusiasm and you're seeking an end or whatever it is, yes, you can get involved and so forth. So by the end of the evening, because of what had transpired, individuals back there began to jump and say, yes, why is this, why is it? And eventually they did vote for agreeing to some of what we wanted, and at the same time to look at it again down the road and to make sure we get what we want. So it does, crowd can create it. If I'd been there by myself without the crowd behind me, they would mm-hmm me to death and then moved on. But with the crowd behind me and the action in there and the noise and the feeling of harmony, it worked out for us. So thank you, Paul. This is a great lesson today, but I never considered it like that, but it does work when you're in there. Now, I look back in the Western movies, and you can see when a little crowd, I used to wonder, why would people decide to go hang a man for sympathy without even knowing anything about him? But now I understand the psychology that they were using, that when your crowds are together, you can get people to lean another way, especially if they're really intoxicated on liquor. Back to you, Paul.
Awesome stuff, Neville. Appreciate you, my friend.
Love you too, man. Be blessed.
Love you, man. Star 6, who's next? Come on out.
Hey, Paul, it's Amber.
Hey, Amber, good morning.
Good morning. This is a fun topic. So, you know, and it makes me think of, so I'm in Key West, you know that. And in Key West, we have something called Fantasy Fest every year, which is like Mardi Gras on steroids with naked people. And we get like 20,000 people down here every year. I mean, it just completely takes over the whole island. But our demographic, like our major demographic, is not college kids. It's like baby boomers with $100,000 plus income. So it's, you know, pretty kind of normal. I don't want to say the word normal people, but, you know, that demographic. But everybody comes down here for this Fantasy Fest. And they do here what they would never do in their hometown, which is get completely naked on Duval Street, get completely drunk, paint their bodies. It's insane. It's completely insane. Yeah, it's very insane. And it's so funny because, you know, I've been through 21 Fantasy Fest, and I've never participated in that aspect of it. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, what's the difference, you know? Like, school teachers will come up to me and they'll say, oh, this is so freeing. We're from Ohio. We're school teachers. And meanwhile, they have no clothes on, and their bodies are painted like these, like, airbrushed crazy things. And they said, you should do this. And I say, no, how about if I come to your hometown and do this? You know, I'm not doing that. I think you have to have, like, an underlying desire to participate in whatever you're at. Like, if you're at a religious revival, maybe you need to be, you know, saved from sins or things that you maybe thought you did. And if you're here in Key West for Fantasy Fest, if you have the secret desire to take off your clothes in a humongous group of people, because, you know, I don't have that underlying desire, so I've never done that here. But there's so many people that do. So, you know, maybe in all these, like, you know, group settings, you know, your inner animal comes out, like, at Super Bowl. I don't know. Like, you have to have some sort of, you know, subliminal or subconscious predisposition to the event that you're participating in, I think, in order to, you know, do that action or whatever it is that you're going to do in that group setting. So I'm going to do a little social experiment this Fantasy Fest for everybody. I'll do some surveys and some videos. Anyways, I don't know if any of that made any sense, but it's pretty funny. So
that's crazy. Wait, so how many people go to this thing?
Like 20,000 people.
20,000 people. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah,
wow.
You can Google it, Fantasy Fest. You'll
Fantasy,
see
well, I don't, make sure you don't do an image search if you don't.
With the kids around.
No, that's totally applicable to what we're talking about. Amber, thanks for sharing that.
Okay.
If you can get 20,000 people to take their clothes off, I bet you can get 20,000 to buy something from you.
There you go. Yeah, bribe pictures.
Oh, good stuff. Star 6 is next. Thanks, Amber.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, is that Mahara?
It is Mahara. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just thought I would jump out and point out a couple of things. Jim Morrison studied crowd psychology, and he would actually start off a concert with an intention of either whipping everybody up into like a party frenzy, or even he purposefully one time said, well, what if I just put some anger energy out there? And it caused a riot because he didn't know his own ability to influence. And so one of the things that I was hearing that made me want to just throw out a little bit that might give people some insight is you can be induced to do something outside of your comfort zone, but when any kind of suggestion is given that rings a bell that goes against what you believe, that seems to be false, that might harm another. If somebody throws out a crowd suggestion, let's go hurt everybody. You know, most people would be like, no, that doesn't sound like a good idea. So it's only in the way it is framed. And even if you are in a deep hypnosis session, if somebody gives you a suggestion that your subconscious mind perceives as either a threat or an assault to your moral compass, you will reject that influence, you will reject that suggestion, and you'll put your blocks up. Just like Janice heard something that went against the grain with her, and she immediately said, I'm shutting down, I'm not listening. So we all have that inner protective and even that ethical standard that's always there on lookout for us. It's when we become excited about something and we're not paying attention, and when the if warning signs slip past our critical thinking, that's when you have a bunch of strangers like turning over a bus and doing, you know, destructive things they normally would not do. So again, the essence of the lesson is to protect your mind and to use crowd energy if it's in the positive, and protect yourself carefully if you're in a crowd that's all focused on doing the wrong things. Back to you.
So, Mahara, before you go, I got to ask you a question. So, you know, the question that comes up for me is, okay, so like if we have this natural, you know, this natural compass that protects us against things that are against our morals and our values, then how is it possible that, you know, like the whole Jim Jones thing could happen? And my hypothesis, and I'm just asking your opinion on this, my hypothesis is that if, like, let's say Jim Jones would have went up to these people and right off the bat said, hey, we're going to go down and we're going to commit suicide, they instantly would have rejected it because they had that moral compass. But
yeah.
because he got everyone in a group setting over time, my theory is, and I'm wondering what you think, my theory is he had time to actually work with and change their moral compass, their internal values, their allegiances over a period of time, so that when that, you know, drastic step was taken by the group, it happened over a long period of time. Would you say that's accurate?
I would say that's true, but I would also add something to it, Paul, because that's a very fascinating point you brought up. It's not just that he got them to bypass their moral compass. He adjusted their moral compass so that they believed that committing suicide would be what God would want them to do. And once somebody can do that, they didn't just ditch their moral compass. They still wanted to please God, even as they raced towards their death, okay? They wanted to please God. He influenced their mind and brainwashed them into believing that they were honoring God by doing this despicable thing. The same thing could be said for Sharia law. If somebody's convinced that that is an ethical and good thing to do in the name of whatever religion, then it messes up their moral compass, because any dastardly deed can be justified if you believe that you're in harmony with spirit when you do that. If somebody can get you to believe that, they can get you to do anything. So he not only bypassed their critical factor, but he adjusted their belief about what was in alignment with God's will and what was out of alignment with God's will or their highest good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And all the more reason why it's so important that we as people, you know, we learn how to think and use our own minds. And I think the danger zone in some of this group stuff comes where, you know, like if you ever get to a point where your will and your decision-making powers have been completely, without question, given over to somebody else. I think that's a danger zone where you're just like, I just have complete trust in this person. I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do. You know, that's a danger zone. And it's kind of like part of what I see us doing on this call is hopefully we're inspiring and encouraging people to do kind of the opposite of that, right? To reach inside and develop our own thinking powers and, you know, learn to make our own decisions and stuff. So anyway, appreciate that, Mahara. Great, great, great insight. Star 6, we've got a few minutes left. Anyone else want to jump out here this morning?
Coach Ray.
Hey, Coach Ray. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Great topic and great discussion you guys just had right there. Here's what really just kind of jumped out to me, just in terms of the group mindset. You know, the power behind the group dynamic is, I mean, nobody can deny it. And obviously, you know, I make a lot of references to sports, and you see the same thing in there. And then inside of that, I think on two different levels. One, everybody can have the same goal of saying, quote unquote, win or success or whatever. But, you know, success means different things to different people or different things to different groups. So when I think for me, what it seemed like when I connect with a group or I'm trying to bring a group together or a team together, right, not every thing that I say is going to resonate with every kid, every player. But ultimately, if what's being taught is about them finding their greatness within a group dynamic, you know, to where the group dynamic isn't more powerful than their own connection with spirit or their own connection with what it is that they're pushing to do, you know. For example, you know, you could have a team of, you know, seniors in high school. Let's say we're going to go play this game or we're going to go play a tournament, right? Our ultimate goal is to win the tournament. Well, you may be able to win some games individually and stuff like that, but if your ultimate goal isn't on giving great effort in what you can do to control the game, then you have no chance of winning the tournament. So by being able to build faith and confidence in your own abilities through spirit, right, and connecting with other people who believe in that same concept, you know, not the concept of, you know, the hype or kind of getting something for nothing or, you know, the quick, easy money or, you know, whatever it is, you know what I mean? But when you connect with people that have that kind of belief, that kind of mindset, you know, I mean, it's to maximize what we do here, you know? So, I mean, but foundationally, you know, to where you can't get your compass off. You can't allow somebody to come in and influence you to where you're more focused on some individual person than connecting with yourself and spirit, having that as the most important, powerful thing, because that's where your creativity is going to come from. That's where your instantaneous blessings are going to come from. That's where, you know, that team harmonizes at the right time with the right moment to win that championship. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, I'm a huge San Antonio Spurs fan, and Greg Popovich has this quote, and they all talk about the Spurs system and how good an organization they are. And he says, there as a team, they look for players who have gotten over themselves. And for me, I think that's just so profound, because ultimately when you start stepping successful, whether it's in sports or for me in my home-based business or for with my relationship with my family, when I start having breakthrough success is when I get over myself and I stop, you know, having the pity party, or I stop hanging up on the same things, or I stop, you know, looking for answers in somebody else as opposed to finding them inside of me. So that's, you know, I mean, I was really blessed with y'all's conversation there, and that was just really just kind of just popped up to me. So hopefully it made a little bit of sense, but that's just kind of my thoughts back to you.
Great thoughts, Coach Ray, and therein lies a small conundrum, right? Because right before you jumped on, we were talking about how maybe you don't want to get in a situation where you just, you know, completely trust someone else and give over your thinking powers. And in some cases, like in the case of a coach, where coach does know best, sometimes it does take some humility. Sometimes it does take some, you know, hey, I may not understand what my leader is telling me to do. I may not understand what my mentor is telling me to do, but I trust they have the results that I want, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it, right? So everything is relative, right? I sometimes remind myself of that. Very, very, somewhat rarely do you find something that just applies in every situation all the time without fail. So anyway, great stuff to think about. Hey, listen, I love you guys. I appreciate you. Let's get out there today. Let's take action towards our better futures. Let's know that better things are waiting for us, and we can control the effects by controlling the causes. So let's make sure we put some good causes in effect today. Let's reach out and help some people today. Let's build some relationships today. Let's move our business forward in new and better ways today. I believe in you. I believe you've got greatness within you, my friends. Let's get out there and make it happen. Thanks for being on the Think and Grow Rich call, and we will see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. So, bye for now.
Protect your mind every day. It is the best gift. Protect it.